Welcome to the Deep Dive. Today, we're going to be unpacking this incredible tool you have in your hands, your EQ360 Workplace Report.
It's a powerful thing, isn't it?
Absolutely. It's not just some document. Think of it more like a map, really, designed to show you the path to, well, even greater leadership and life success.
Mm-hmm.
Our mission today, it's pretty straightforward, to guide you through your personal report, help you pull out the most important insights for your own growth.
Because emotional intelligence, it's just so fundamental now.
It really is. It's, you know, universally critical. For navigating work challenges, sure, but also just our personal lives, right? Doing it with a bit more grace and impact.
Exactly. And what's really fascinating here, I think, is that emotional intelligence isn't just some corporate buzzword. It's truly the bedrock.
Bedrock, I like that.
Yeah, the foundation for effective relationships, sharp critical thinking, and importantly, resilient leadership. This deep dive is all about making that connection specifically for you.
Showing how your report lights up your path.
Precisely. Illuminating that unique path forward.
Okay. So before we even crack open the report itself,
yeah,
let's talk about a really powerful concept. It sort of underpins why this 360 feedback is so valuable.
Ah, you mean the Johari window.
Exactly. The Johari window. Think of it as the lens, maybe, through which we'll view all this information that's coming your way.
It's a fantastic model, really useful for understanding self-awareness and, you know, how we see ourselves versus how others might see us.
Right.
It's built on four quadrants. Each one shows a different facet of who we are. First up is the open self.
Okay.
This is the stuff you know about yourself and others know it too. It's like shared knowledge, the behaviors everyone sees, your public persona, basically.
Yeah, what everyone agrees on.
Then you have the blind self. Now, this one is arguably the most, well, insightful when you're looking at 360 feedback.
Why is that?
Because it's what others know about you that you don't know about yourself, your blind spots. And uncovering those can be, well, quite eye-opening.
I can imagine. Okay, what's the third?
The third is the hidden self. This covers what you know about yourself, but others don't. Your private feelings, secrets, things you choose not to share.
Makes sense.
And finally, the unknown self. This is the stuff neither you nor others know about you. Think untapped potential, maybe unconscious motivations, still hidden.
Interesting. So how does knowing this model help?
Well, the power of the Johari window, especially for leadership and relationships, is that it encourages you to actively try and expand your open self.
Make more things known.
Exactly. And at the same time, consciously work to shrink your blind self. When you increase that shared understanding
yeah.
and you bravely look at those blind spots,
yeah.
you build much stronger connections. You can lead more authentically. You grow a lot.
So the EQ360 report is like a tool to do that.
It's a fantastic starting point, yes. It's designed to, you know, affirm your strengths, give you new perspectives, uncover those crucial blind spots, and pinpoint the really meaningful conversations you can have. Conversations based on genuine curiosity, not defensiveness, about those shared perceptions.
That idea of the blind self is really fascinating, and probably, like you said, uncomfortable sometimes. Mm. In your experience, what's a common blind spot leaders often find in their 360 feedback? Something surprising, maybe.
That's a great question. It really gets to the heart of it. One of the most common ones I see relates to assertiveness.
Assertiveness. How so?
Well, many leaders think they're being direct, clear, you know, but their team might actually perceive them as aggressive or sometimes the opposite, too passive, avoiding conflict.
So a mismatch in perception.
Exactly. The leader thinks they're hitting the mark, but the feedback shows how it's actually landing. It's often not about their intent, but about the received perception. And that's where the discomfort often comes from, but also the opportunity for growth.
That's a perfect segue.
Yeah.
So with that Johari window lens in mind, understanding ourselves and others, let's actually open your EQ360 report now.
Right. Let's see how it illuminates those areas for you.
And remember, as we go through this, we're looking at the types of insights, the structure of the feedback. Not specific scores, because your report is totally unique to you.
Mm-hmm.
Its main purpose is to give you that multi-rater view. A real 360-degree perspective on your emotional and social functioning. It combines your own self-assessment with how your raters see you.
Exactly. And as you look through the first few pages, the intro sections, you'll see it explains how to read the report.
Okay.
It clarifies the types of raters, manager, peers, direct reports, maybe even family or friends or an other category. and it explains the confidentiality rules.
Ah, confidentiality, that's important.
Very. Any specific rater group, like your peers or direct reports, needs at least three people responding for their scores to be shown separately. If there are fewer than three, their ratings get rolled into that general other category to protect anonymity.
Good to know. What about those terms gaps and agreement?
Right. You'll see those defined. A gap basically means there's a noticeable difference, usually 10 points or more, between how you rated yourself and how a specific group rated you, or maybe between two different rater groups.
An agreement.
Agreement just means the scores are closer, more aligned. But here's the key insight.
Yeah.
It's not just that there's a gap or agreement. It's digging into why it might exist. A big gap isn't necessarily a bad thing. It's an invitation to get curious.
Curious how?
Well, are you maybe being too hard on yourself? Or are others seeing a strength, a superpower that you haven't really owned yet? The report points you to the conversation starter, but you have to uncover the deeper meaning behind it.
You know, I've heard people say they should aim for perfect scores across the board. But you're saying that's not really the goal.
Absolutely not. That's a really common misconception, and honestly, it can be counterproductive.
Why is that? Why is context so important here?
It's vital because we are not looking for some kind of perfect profile with high scores everywhere. That's just not realistic or even desirable. Your unique situation, your specific leadership challenges, your role, that's what matters most.
So it's about being sharp where it counts for you.
Precisely. The goal isn't universal excellence. It's having the right EQ skills sharp for your specific success. And sometimes, you know, overdoing a strength can actually become a weakness.
Like what?
Well, for example, being extremely optimistic all the time might actually stop you from seeing genuine risks you need to address. It's about strategic balance and application, not just hitting high numbers.
That's a really crucial distinction. Okay, so as you flip through your report, you'll get to a section outlining the EQI 2.0 model of emotional intelligence.
Yeah.
It looks pretty comprehensive.
It is. It provides the framework. This model organizes emotional intelligence into five main composite scales, and each of those is made up of three specific subscales.
Yeah.
So the five big ones are self-perception, self-expression, interpersonal decision-making, and stress management. And then within those, you've got the 15 subscales, like under self-perception, you'll see self-regard, self-actualization, and emotional self-awareness.
I remember seeing these in the prep work.
Exactly. This model isn't just random. It aims for a holistic view of emotional functioning.
Mm.
You've already engaged with it, so this part is really just a quick refresher on that foundation.
Got it.
But if we connect this to the bigger picture, what's really crucial to grasp is that these areas don't operate in isolation. They interact. They influence each other in really powerful ways.
How so? Give me an example.
Okay, well, take self-regard. Many think it's just confidence, right?
Mm.
But it's actually kind of the hidden bedrock for genuine empathy.
Really? How?
You can only truly connect with someone else's struggles if you feel fundamentally secure in your own self-worth. Otherwise, empathy can feel draining or even threatening.
Huh. I never thought of it that way. Any other examples?
Sure. Think about having higher assertiveness, but maybe lower empathy. That combo could lead to a communication style that others experience as harsh or abrasive, even if you don't mean it that way.
Right. Intent versus impact again.
Exactly. Or what about higher self-actualization, always striving, combined with lower self-regard? That might look like someone who's constantly pushing to achieve, but is never actually happy with their accomplishments, never able to acknowledge them.
Wow. So it's about the balance.
It really is. Always think in terms of higher and lower scores relative to each other, not just high or low in isolation. It's the interplay, the harmony or lack thereof, that tells the story.
That interplay is fascinating. It's clearly not just about the raw scores. Okay, so as we start decoding your unique emotional landscape, let's first focus on your own view, your self-perceptions.
Right. You'll find these summarized early in the report. This page is all about your starting perspective, how you rated yourself across these areas.
And these scores are normed, you mentioned.
Yes, exactly. They're normed, which means they're compared against a large group of working adults who are similar in age, from the same country, and of the same gender.
So it gives context.
It gives you a valuable benchmark. Yes, a context for your own results. So as you look at this summary of your self ratings, just take a moment. Reflect a bit.
What should I be asking myself?
Good question. Start with. What immediately jumps out at you? Anything surprising? What's there to appreciate in your scores? How do they stack up against that best guess estimate you did in the prep activity?
Mm-hmm.
Also, think about where you see your higher scores, your superpowers maybe. What do you think helped you develop those strengths? And importantly, when and where do you really get to use them effectively? But also, consider if there are times you might be overdoing those strengths, maybe sometimes to your own detriment.
Okay. What about the lower scores?
Yeah, shift your focus there too. Are these lower scoring areas a surprise? Could growing in these areas hold some keys to solving current challenges, personal or professional?
That's a deep question.
It is. And think about those combinations again. When you pair a higher scoring subscale with a lower scoring one, what does it actually look like in your behavior?
Like the examples you gave.
Exactly, like higher emotional self-awareness, but lower emotional expression. Maybe you expect people to just know how you feel without you saying it. We all know someone like that, right?
Yeah, definitely. Or the other one.
High empathy with lower assertiveness. That could lead to you constantly putting your own needs aside just to avoid any kind of conflict. These combinations, these potential imbalances, that's often where the richest, most actionable insights are found.
Yes, where the real aha moments might happen, isn't it?
Yeah.
It definitely takes some courage to look at those self-perceptions honestly. Okay, so after reflecting on your own scores, it's time to bring in the other perspectives.
Right. We move from self-perception to how others see you. This is where the 360 part really comes alive, that invaluable external lens.
Where do we see that first?
Well, there's usually an overview figure, often called something like profile gap analysis. It gives you a quick visual snapshot of the agreement, or lack thereof, between how you see yourself and how your raters see you.
How does it show that?
Typically, subscales shown on the right side mean there's healthy agreement. You and others see things similarly. But the ones landing in the left quadrants, those highlight your awareness gaps, areas where others perceive you differently than you perceive yourself.
Awareness gaps. Okay.
And what's really fascinating and potentially so useful is that these gaps offer huge opportunities for growth.
How so?
Well, think about a subscale where others score you higher than you scored yourself. That could be a genuine blind spot, right?
Right.
Maybe you're actually doing better than you think. Or others see a strength you haven't fully recognized or owned yet.
Okay, that's positive. What are the other way around?
If you rate yourself higher, but others rate you lower, that might signal what we sometimes call a mask.
A mask.
Yeah, like you're consciously behaving in a way that doesn't quite align with how you actually feel inside. And this brings up a really critical point.
Which is?
If you are consciously putting on a mask, you have to consider the cost. Is it draining your energy? For example, if you're faking optimism or stress tolerance when you're actually struggling.
Yeah.
Your manager might see the mask, think you're doing great, and pile on even more challenges, which is probably the last thing you need at that moment.
Oof, yeah. That could backfire badly.
It really can. So the question to ask yourself when you sit gap like that is there a cost, personal or professional, to this group experiencing me differently from my own reality?
That's a powerful question. Faking optimism could lead to getting assigned juggling flaming chainsaws when you're barely handling the regular ones.
Exactly. It takes real bravery to look honestly at those gaps. Now, as you keep moving through the report, you'll find sections that give you a broader overview.
Okay.
And then a more detailed, granular look at how you and your various rater groups responded across all the composite scales and the individual subscales. Keep an eye out for asterisks or other markers.
Why the asterisks?
They usually indicate a statistically significant difference between your self-score and a rater group score. These are often really prime areas for deeper exploration and conversation.
Got it. So the report breaks down each subscale individually too, right? Pages and pages of them.
Yes, it does. But instead of us trying to walk through every single one, let's just look at the format of a typical subscale page. They generally follow a consistent structure.
Okay, good idea. So once you understand one, you understand them all.
Pretty much. So each dedicated subscale section usually starts with a part called what you said.
Right, focusing on my score first.
Exactly. It gives an interpretation of your self-score for that specific subscale. So if your self-regard score was, say, on the lower side, the text might suggest you could benefit from focusing there. If your emotional self-awareness was higher, it might highlight how conscious you are of your emotions.
And it connects it to work.
Yes. There's usually a bit about emotional implications on the job, explaining the potential impact of your score, maybe lower motivation, maybe a very active internal monologue. And crucially, it offers strategies for action.
Ah, practical tips.
Concrete steps, invitations to experiment, things like conduct a self-regard inventory. Which isn't just reading, it's an active process of identifying and appreciating your accomplishments. Or maybe managing your emotional radar. practical things you can try.
Okay, what comes after what you said?
Next, you'll usually see a section called Balancing Your EI. This part is really insightful.
How so?
It explains how the current subscale you're looking at compares to three other related subscales. The idea is to help you see the interplay and work towards a more harmonious emotional functioning.
Give me an example.
Okay. Maybe your self-regard score is noticeably lower than your problem-solving score. The report might suggest that perhaps you're basing too much of your self-worth only on your ability to find solutions, which, you know, can be pretty exhausting long-term. It highlights how interconnected everything is.
That makes sense. It shows the relationships between skills.
Precisely. And then finally, you get the what your rater said section. This is where that 360-degree view really comes into focus for that specific skill.
What's in there?
You'll typically see a table. It shows abbreviated versions of the assessment items related to that subscale, along with the average ratings your different rater groups gave you, usually on that 1 to 5 scale.
Okay, I see the raw-ish data.
Right. And this section will usually highlight the biggest gap, pinpointing the rater group whose score differed the most from your self-assessment on this particular subscale. Maybe your peers see your assertiveness very differently than you do, for example.
Hmm.
It also often shows the closest agreement, identifying the rater group whose view most closely matched your own for this subscale.
So gaps in agreements again, but for this specific skill.
Exactly. And remember the statistically significant differences we mentioned. Any item scores in this data table that are, say, 1.5 points different from your own score, higher or lower, are usually flagged. These differences are like sparks.
Sparks.
Sparks for curious, meaningful conversations, not arguments, but conversations. They can really help expand your self-awareness and ultimately your leadership impact.
Those significant differences sound key. They invite you to ask not just what people see, but maybe why they see it that way. Okay, moving towards the end of the main report, there's a unique indicator, right? Something about happiness.
Yes, that's right. Towards the end, usually around page 38 or so, you'll find the happiness indicator.
How is happiness defined here? It's not just feeling cheerful, is it?
No, it's described more deeply as feelings of satisfaction, contentment, and the general ability to enjoy life. And what makes it unique in this model is that it's seen as both contributing to and being a product of emotional intelligence. So it acts as a really strong indicator of your overall emotional health and well-being.
Interesting. And it's linked to other scales.
It is. Your overall happiness result is shown as being intrinsically linked to 4 key subscales we've already touched on: self-regard, optimism, interpersonal relationships, and self-actualization.
So those 4 heavily influence happiness.
They're seen as major drivers, yes. And for each of those linked subscales, the report usually offers brief strategy prompts aimed at boosting overall happiness.
Like what?
For self-regard, it might suggest reflecting on past accomplishments to build that inner appreciation. For optimism, maybe questioning the situations where you tend to be least optimistic.
Mm-hmm.
For interpersonal relationships, perhaps exploring what causes friction or struggles in your key connections. And for self-actualization, it might prompt you to consider the legacy you want to leave.
Wow. So it ties it all together.
It really does. It's a powerful reminder that EQ isn't just about work performance. It's about your whole self, your overall well-being.
The wonderful reminder of how holistic this all is.
Okay,
so you've explored your report. You've found some insights, maybe uncovered some surprising dynamics. So what now? What happens next?
Good question. That's where the action planning comes in.
All right, this is where your EQI exploration and action planning document becomes really important. It's designed to be the place where you capture your thoughts, your reflections, and guide your actual development going forward.
Exactly. It helps you move from just having the insight to actually doing something with it, making it intentional.
So how does it help structure that?
Well, there's a great section on development planning considerations. It provides a framework to make your goals really concrete and actionable. Let's take an example, maybe developing assertiveness in meetings.
Okay, good example.
First, think about control. Ask yourself, who actually needs to change for me to achieve this goal? Is this goal truly within my control? Is my current work environment even conducive to this? And also, phrase your goals positively. What do you want to do, not just what you don't want to do.
Right. Focus on the positive action.
Then motivation. Be really honest here. How motivated are you really to work on this? Genuine motivation is what sustains effort.
Makes sense. What's next?
Context. Have you clearly defined when, where, how, and with whom you want to be more assertive? Is it in one specific team meeting? with one particular person. In a certain type of situation, get specific. Specificity makes it real.
Okay. Control, motivation, context.
Fourth is evidence. Imagine you've successfully grown in this area. How will you know? What will you notice that's different? What will you actually feel, hear, see, and do when you've achieved it? Picture the success.
Evidence of change. Got it.
Then resources. What internal strengths or skills do you already have that can help you? What external resources, maybe tools or knowledge, do you need to acquire to be more assertive effectively?
Uh-huh.
Nearly there. Just two more. Feedback. How are you going to track your progress? What kind of immediate feedback can you gather, maybe right after a meeting? And how will you collect it? This loop is crucial for learning and adjusting.
Feedback loop. Okay.
Yeah.
And the last one.
Support. Who can help you with this? A coach? A mentor? A trusted colleague who's in those meetings? Where could you maybe practice this new behavior in a lower risk setting first? And who will you hold yourself accountable to?
Wow, that's thorough.
Each of those questions helps turn a vague intention, like be more assertive, into a concrete, achievable plan.
And beyond just planning, that document also lists different ways to actually develop these skills, right? The development activities.
Yes, absolutely. It outlines a whole toolbox of things you can do. Mentoring, coaching, deliberate practice, keeping a journal, joining peer learning groups, even teaching the skill to someone else, which really cements your own understanding. Lots of options.
All designed to help integrate these insights into, well, your daily life.
And to make it super practical, that last section of the EQI exploration document has some excellent ongoing strategies.
Like what?
Well, you can regularly review your week against the 16 skills using something called the 4F review process. Yeah. Ask yourself, which EQ skills did I use well this week, and what was the result? That's facts. How did I feel? Feelings. Were there situations where using more of these skills would have helped? What actually happened? What was needed? What got in the way? Findings. And based on that, what can I do differently next time? What's my plan going forward? Futures.
Facts, feelings, findings, futures. I like that cycle.
It's a great way to keep learning from experience. Another tip is to be proactive.
Proactive how?
Take a few minutes at the start of your week to preflect. Look ahead. What meetings, tasks, interactions are coming up that could be opportunities to practice or experiment with an EQ skill you're developing? Choose maybe one main EQ area to really focus on that week, and maybe identify three others that will support your success. That intentional focus can make a huge difference.
Reflection, not just reflection. Nice.
And here's a slightly more modern suggestion you might find helpful.
Oh.
You can actually use ChatGPT as a starting point.
Really? Use AI?
Yeah, as a thought partner. Try giving it a prompt like, I'm working on, say, being more assertive in, say, team meetings. Give me some suggestions for specific actions I could take, including ways to get feedback so I can track my progress. It can be surprisingly good at generating ideas and structuring things to get you started.
Huh. That's a clever use for it, a thought partner.
Exactly. It won't do the work for you, but it can spark ideas.
Okay, so this deep dive into the EQ360 report, It really feels like just the beginning of a potentially powerful journey, doesn't it?
It absolutely is.
You now have this robust framework, a way to understand your own emotional landscape, Pinpoint those specific areas for growth, and maybe most importantly, create concrete, actionable plans to actually do something about it.
That's the goal. And if we connect this all back to the bigger picture one last time, remember, self-awareness is vital. Yes, absolutely crucial. But the real transformative power of emotional intelligence comes from its application, how you actually use it.
Yeah.
Your report gives you a clear snapshot of where you are now. But the why this matters for your leadership and the how you'll grow, that's now in your hands.
It puts the ownership back on you.
It does. So as you reflect on everything we've discussed today, here's maybe one final provocative thought or question to consider. What single, small, maybe even slightly courageous step will you commit to taking today, right now, to start bridging that gap between the insight you've gained and taking real action?